Chapter 9. The powwow MC breaks into my thoughts. Intertribal dance! Everybody welcome! Swish and sway the Ojibwe! I nudge Jamie. Let's walk around before we go back to our seats. I'm too worked up about Travis. The latest episode of the Lily and Travis saga has set me on edge. Damn meth ruining people's lives, Travis's and... Nope, I don't want to think about him. Hey, would you mind if I went for a quick run or something? I ask. Suddenly, I'm feeling anxious, like maybe I've shared something that I shouldn't have. You can browse the Bender booths, or I'm sure Levi is around somewhere. I don't like feeling like this. Donis. The intensity of the way he says my name grabs my attention. I'll come with, Jamie says. You want to talk? I'll listen. If you don't, that's okay. We can just run together. Jamie is doing it again, being kind and sympathetic, making it so easy to open up to him. I realize that running with Jamie has become the best part of my day, the only normal part in this new normal. I nod gratefully. We make our way past people leaving the powwow grounds. You know what would help? I say as we reach Ice Circle Drive. Set the pace. Push me so I burn off this anger. Okay? You got it. He grins, and something flips in my stomach, as if I've swallowed magnets and Jamie is made of steel. Don't be that girl. I force myself not to smile back. Let's see what you've got, he says, launching into a sprint. It works. We do a fast 2-mile loop that requires all of my physical and mental energy. I give a thumbs up as we catch our breath. Running is good medicine. Do you want to talk about it now? Jamie asks. Travis drank at parties, I say as we walk back to the powwow grounds. He didn't make any teams, so he wasn't under any player code of conduct. 2 years ago, he started dabbling in other stuff. There's relief in telling a secret, a burden lifted just by sharing it with someone. And Jamie listens patiently. When I tried telling Levi last fall and winter, he didn't seem to take my concerns about Travis seriously. I saw my brother giving Travis hell after that, so I guess Levi did listen. He just wasn't sympathetic in the moment, the way that Jamie is. Meth's cheaper than booze and lasts longer. His mom got into meth. People call her the meth queen. Travis started skipping school a lot and took fewer AP classes. Lily caught him making meth over Christmas break. Like, actually cooking it, Jamie. Since then, it seems like more people in town and on the res are using. I take a deep breath before adding, sometimes it's people you never in a million years thought would get mixed up in it. Even though Jamie is listening without a trace of judgment, I cut myself off. It feels disloyal to say anything more. I'd be revealing the worst parts about someone I love. I never thought about secrets being like a bullseye. The smaller the circle, the bigger the secret. We reach the vendor booths. Thanks for listening, Jamie, but I think that's all I want to say for now. Let's just browse a bit, okay? Whatever you want, Donis, Jamie says gently. Any recommendations? He asks, pausing at a table of books for sale. I scan the titles quickly and point to Custer Died for Your Sins by Vine Deloria Jr. Auntie got me that book when I was 14. That was the year we made my jingle dress skirt. Each day, she had me sew one jingle cone on my skirt. 365 days, 365 teachings. You're so lucky to have her in your life, Jamie says, paying for the book. I lead Jamie over to my cousin Eva's stand with her gorgeous beadwork, strawberry earrings, floral medallion necklaces, and even an ornate checkbook cover. She's also set out braids of sweetgrass for sale. Since Eva is in deep conversation with customers, I tuck a $20 bill beneath her bottle of pop and take 2 green braids of grass the length of my arm. I hand one to Jamie and we hold the sweetgrass up to our noses. Jamie closes his eyes as he inhales the fresh, delicate sweetness. I catch a whiff of fry bread and my stomach gurgles. Oh man, you got to try this. I pull Jamie toward a small trailer with a big window and order one piece of fry bread for us to share. Hot out of the fryer. I add butter and maple syrup, and Jamie and I sit down at a nearby picnic table. I tear one half for Jamie, and he holds it in a paper towel until it's cooled off enough to eat. It's perfect. Crispy outside and fluffy inside. I sit up straight when Jamie moans, "Oh, Donis, this is so good," he says, mouth still full of his first bite. "We gotta run extra miles tomorrow." He swallows and takes an even bigger bite. "So worth it. So worth it," I mumble in agreement, cramming more into my mouth. As we split up to go to the bathroom and wash the sticky syrup from our fingers, I text Lily, who still hasn't responded to my previous text. She'll see it when she checks her phone after the intertribals finish. She's more likely to reply to a raunchy one anyway. Me. JJ moaned while eating fry bread. His GF? Very, very, very lucky. During the dinner break, I bring Jamie back to Auntie and Art's RV. The twins are in shorts and t-shirts now. They've decided to skip the evening dances to play with their cousins and conk out early. Auntie finishes unbraiding Pauline's hair, pulling it into a high ponytail and wrapping it into a bun. Art calls Jamie over to the grill to fix a plate for supper. When Art cracks a joke, I feel Jamie's hearty laugh all the way to my toes. When Pauline runs off, it's my turn. I walk over to the picnic table where Auntie is still perched. I plunk myself on the bench, my back facing her. She picks up the hairbrush and starts working through my thick mop, pulling it into a high ponytail like Pauline's. Jamie sets his plate down at one end of the picnic table. "Will you fix me a plate too?" I ask sweetly. Jamie grins and heads back to the table where the food is spread out. "Auntie, why did you snap at me about the blanket party?" I ask. "Donis, I love you like my own daughter. The Nishquewag who show up at those blanket parties, they know that violence firsthand." Auntie's hands move quickly, dividing my ponytail into thirds, which she will braid separately before weaving the three braids together into an elaborate braid that she'll wrap into a bun. It's her favorite hairstyle for me, one she's done many times since I was a child. "It's just, in that moment, I was pissed you were so eager to go. I hate going, but I thank Creator each time that you're not with me. I keep hoping your privileges will keep you safe. Your last name, your light skin, your money, your size, even." Auntie spots Jamie heading back from the grill area and finishes with, "I'm thankful for you having those advantages, but I get mad and scared because my Black and Ojibwe daughters don't." She's right. All the things I've been uncomfortable with, advantages I've done nothing to earn, they are privileges. The twins will face struggles that I never will. I think back to how I begged to tag along to the blanket party and feel ashamed. She kisses the side of my head as Jamie hands me a plate with fried white fish, potatoes, and green beans. I accept it gratefully, her words still ringing in my head, and we both dig in. "So, Jamie, I see Donis has been showing you around our town. Is she also taking you to the Minor 49er? Auntie asks. "A minor what?" Jamie looks up from his plate. "Powwow parties are called 49ers, I explain. "When it's not for adults, it's a minor 49er. "So it's a party just for teens?" Jamie asks, as if to clarify for himself. "Yeah," I motion, taking a sip of an imaginary bottle. "Beer and shenanigans." Jamie glances at Auntie to gauge her reaction. "It's okay to have fun and not be stupid about it," Auntie says, then gives me a pointed look. "I mean, throwing a party at your grandparents' big fancy house in town would not be smart at all. But I suppose having a beer or two in the woods with friends while one person stays sober," she eyeballs Jamie, "and sleeping over at a relative's house on the island is a more intelligent and safe option. Right, Donis?" "Yes, Auntie," I say meekly. Of course, Auntie knows about my party last weekend. I can never hide anything from her. Even when I try, my aunt has informants everywhere, it seems. "Don't worry about Elvis and Patsy," she tells me. "The dogs are staying at Sini's this weekend." "Make sure they don't come back all mean like her," I grumble. Auntie gives me a wry smile. "You think you're the only one Sini ever made cry?" When we leave, Art shakes Jamie's hand the way Nish guys do, reaching around to grasp Jamie's thumb rather than the fingers. Auntie hugs me, whispering, "I'm sorry I took out my fear on you. I'll do better. I love you, Donis." "I know," I whisper back, squeezing her tight. "I'm sorry too, Auntie." As we walk away, Auntie calls after us. "Let your mom know you're going to the island, so she won't worry about you." On the ferry ride to Sugar Island, I text Mom. Auntie knows that I have to strike a delicate balance by giving my mother enough info so she won't fret, but not too many details and trigger new worries. Me. Hanging with Lily and friends on island. We'll stay at Auntie's. Don't worry, I'll be safe. Technically, I'm not lying. Jamie and I are friends. Lily will be at the party after she deals with Travis. I shoot a text to Lily. Still no response to either of my previous texts. Me. Headed to 49er with JJ. What happened with Trav? Hey, if you need to let your uncle know where you're at, text him now. You can't get a signal except on the north side where it's close enough to some Canadian cell towers. Rest of the island is a dead zone. Plus, the east side is all cliffs and caves, so signals just bounce around.
Cliffs and caves? Jamie asks.
Yeah, it's really remote. Some caves are only accessible from the water. Jamie raises an eyebrow, so I go into tour guide mode again, lowering my voice to a whisper. Did you know that Al Capone smuggled liquor across the border during Prohibition? He'd go to Washkey Bay over in Brimley. Supposedly, he also had a stockpile on Sugar Island.
Did you know that Al Capone's nickname was Scarface and he had syphilis and gonorrhea when he went to prison for tax evasion? Jamie says. But we just have the nickname in common.
I laugh and then feel compelled to mention the girlfriend. Jennifer is a lucky girl. Will I get to meet her at Shagala? It's the first Saturday in October. You should tell her now because there are only 2 flights a day into the nearest airport. I force myself to stop babbling. As we approach the next intersection, I motion for him to turn. Roads narrow until it's just a 2-track. 2 ruts on an unpaved trail. Cars fit into spaces between trees. He backs into a spot.
Thanks for the guidance, Jamie says. About the directions here and about the dance. I'll let Jen know.
Hearing him say her nickname makes her more real to me. Jennifer is too formal, while Jenny is too cutesy. But I could imagine sitting next to a Jen at the round dining tables in the Superior Shores ballroom and helping her to feel welcome. I'll need to line up a date for Shagala before Levi asks me to be Stormy's escort again. Lily, I'll ask her to go with me. We can kick off our shoes and dance to every song. We follow the sounds of people singing 49er songs, funny songs about Rez life set to drumming. The singing and laughing grow louder as we approach an old barn. A group of guys stand in a circle, each with a small handheld drum. One guy sings and drums while everyone else listens. Have you seen my powwow snag? Prettiest girl ain't no brag. Dancing barefoot on the grass, red tube top and flattest ass. Can fillet a fish and gut a deer. Works at Indian Health, got a career. Showed her off around my res. That's your cousin, my kokum says. The beer is ice cold and goes down like water, so I get another. I feel a prickle of worry when I look around but don't see Lily anywhere. I don't bother checking my phone because there's no signal out here. My brother shouts my god-awful nickname, repeated like a chorus by his friends and fans. My former teammate, Macy Manitou, chants it the loudest. Bubble, bubble, bubble. It feels like swimming upstream to reach them across the barn. Macy's shiny long brown hair covers one eye, but her other eye takes in my Girls on the Run t-shirt, cut-off jeans, jacked-up knee, and old running shoes. She wrinkles her nose as if I stepped in Moen. In contrast, Macy wears a black bandana top, low-cut jeans with an unfinished waistband, and black Chuck Taylor all-star low-top sneakers. Levi throws an arm around me. He pulls Macy next to him with his other hand.
Jamie, you never talk about your girl. Is she like these two?
Levi asks Jamie. Mad hockey skills, but perfect princesses off the ice. He tilts his head each way. This brat
is Macy. So, what's the deal with your scar? Macy dives right in, rude as usual. Car accident, Jamie says. He turns to me. So, Bubble, huh? What's with the nickname? I chug my beer and pretend I don't hear him, but Macy gleefully pipes up. Bubble is short for bubble butt. Chidiashkawe, big butt woman. Her laughter is a wind chime of glass shards, quick and pretty, but with dangerous edges. Everyone cracks up, but Jamie doesn't join in, just gives me a small smile. Macy spins out of Levi's grasp and over to the drummers. Guilty, I say with a shrug, but my face is burning. I'm going to kill Macy. Then Levi. I scan the crowd for Lily again. She'd help me kill them, be my alibi, or be Thelma to my Louise. In middle school, I wore oversized glasses and had a growth spurt, so all my pants were too short and everyone called me Urkel, even my teammates, Jamie tells me before stepping away to refill my cup. I flash him a grateful smile. I try picturing him as the dorky television character, but it doesn't align with the athletic, confident guy I watch. Maybe his compassion stems from that early teasing. When Jamie returns with my beer, we join the crowd watching Macy twirling around the drummers. As annoyed as I am with her, I have to admit she's mesmerizing to watch. She does fancy shawl steps to a 49er version of the theme song to SpongeBob SquarePants. She's another one with smooth dance moves. Macy holds her arms out as if to display an imaginary shawl. Her black chucks barely touch the concrete as she dances. I finish my third drink as quickly as my first and start heading back to the keg. I offer to get Jamie a drink, but he shakes his head. I notice he's been sipping the same can of pop since we arrived. Lots of hockey players won't drink for the whole season. Maybe Jamie's a rule follower, too. As I refill my cup at the keg, Levi appears. He swipes it and downs the entire thing. You being a good ambassador to the new skin? I bristle. Levi knows I hate it when he calls Nishnob skins, as if using the Redskin slur ourselves makes it okay. Yep, I say, grabbing the cup back. You gonna make your move tonight? He asks with a sly smile. Hells no, Levi. He's got a girlfriend. Eh, he says dismissively, watching me refill it once more. I don't poach boyfriends, I say evenly. Levi and I have both grown up with the rumors of what his mom did. Besides, you know I don't date hockey players. I'm not some clingy-ass anglerfish girlfriend. I exaggerate a shudder. Don't tell me this is because you're not over Toivo John, Levi groans. My brother gives everyone a nickname, except TJ. Levi always uses his real name, the Finlander name TJ shares with his dad and grandpa, even though they go by different versions. Hey, I snap. We don't do this, stick our noses in each other's relationships, because if we do, I'd be saying shit about all the girls you use and toss away like Kleenex. He raises an eyebrow. What am I supposed to do when they make it so easy? Maybe treat them with respect? I always say miigwetch afterward, he says. I've never wanted to smack the smug from my brother more than at this moment. Levi, I hope someday a girl you really, truly love walks away from you, and that you know that it's totally your fault. Why? Oh, right. What do you call it? Guy lies? Levi clicks his tongue and shakes his head in mock pity. Toivo John really messed you up. Screw you, Levi. Something churns in my stomach like magma. The music, laughter, and conversations fill the pole barn, suddenly overwhelming my senses. I push my way to the barn's side opening. Weaving around the maze of parked cars, I swat away the image of TJ. His face illuminated by the glow of a tiny wood stove inside the ice shanty. Intertwined in a large sleeping bag on a camp mattress, whispering how much he loved me between gasps. Toivo John Kiwaden. The rotten, lying liar. My introduction to Guy Lies. That's not true. He wasn't the first one to lie to you. I am dizzy and queasy. My feet find every stone and exposed tree root as I stumble on the way to Jamie's truck. Something flaps large wings over my head. I veer a few steps into the woods and the sick erupts from inside me.
I collapse on my knees, one still sore from earlier today. As I wipe my mouth, I hear strange sounds. I pause, listening. Arguing. Crying. I jump up as I see Lily and Travis walking down the two track, 10 feet away from me. Lily looks upset and she begins to speed up. That jerk. I open my mouth to call out to Lily and ask if she needs help when suddenly, Travis halts. He grabs Lily's arm to stop her from walking away. When she yanks free, he pulls a gun from the back of his jeans. My scream is trapped in my throat. Only a gurgle escapes. Lily snaps her head in my direction, and I see the fear in her eyes, knowing it's reflected in mine. I freeze as Travis spins around to aim the snub-nosed revolver at me. Only my eyes move, darting from the gun to Lily's horrified expression. Gun, shock. Gun, disbelief. Gun, fear. My ears are pressure-filled by the pounding of my heart. There is no other sound. The thumb, the thumb, the thumb. Travis's hands shake with tiny tremors. We sat next to each other in every AP class. I rooted for him to get his act together. I'm gonna die. Lily will watch me die. The oily sweetness is familiar. Art's garage. Someone used WD-40 to clean this gun. More sense. Pine. Damp moss, skunky sweat, and something sharp. Cat pee? The thumb, the thumb, the thumb. Suddenly, Travis acts as if the gun transformed into a machete. He makes odd diagonal slicing motions toward the ground at invisible targets surrounding him. Maybe he'll forget about me. Lily and I can run away or jump into Jamie's truck. Terror grips my heart. The gun. Travis aims at my face again. Mom. She won't survive this. One bullet will kill us both. A brave hand reaches for the gun. Lily's fingers outstretched, demanding. Give it. Now. The thumb. I am thinking of my mother when the blast changes everything.